Well, he was with me a few years ago, and he's back. Latest work, God's Message to the World. You've got me all wrong. Neil Donald Walsh joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. I'm looking forward to this. Neil Donald Walsh, of course, is a modern-day spiritual messenger. His words continue to touch so many people in profound ways, so many. He's been a radio station program director, a newspaper reporter, managing editor. He has been a public information officer for a public school system. And, of course, I'm going to have him re-explain an incredible story that occurred with him a long time ago when he was down and out. And then he wrote a book called Conversations with God, and now it's a series. It sold over 10 million copies in 37 languages. Always a pleasure, Neil. Happy holidays to you, my friend. How are you?
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here, and thank you very much. I'm just great.
Okay, long time ago in a far-off land, Neil Donald Walsh was very down and out. What happened to you?
Well, everything, you know, all at once. My career fell apart. My health collapsed. My relationship collapsed as well. Everything, just my whole life just fell apart. It seemed in the same three-month period. Normally in my life, these things, or in people's lives, I guess, these things would happen one at a time. Maybe your work isn't going so well, but the relationship is working, or the relationship isn't going so well, but your career is okay, but your health is all right. In my case, all three things happened at once, and so I found myself literally, more than down and out. I was actually living on the street, as it happens. And I was a street person for a year, 1 week shy of a year, because I had lost everything. And I fell through the cracks of the social welfare system. So there I was walking the streets, asking for nickels, dimes, and dollars from people to stay alive. And I did that for a year of my life. And at the end of that year, I wound up finally finding a part-time job once again in broadcasting. So there I was working again. And that's when it hit me, the utter vacuousness of life, because I got back into the working world, and then I was working like 8, 10, 12, in some cases 14 hours a day as a program director of a small radio station in Oregon. And I thought, wow, is this it? I mean, is this really all there is? Because if this is all there is to life, I don't want to play anymore. I'm just done. I'm really done, and I don't want to play anymore. So I woke up in the middle of the night at 4:30 in the morning one night, and I just, wrote an angry letter to God, and I just said, what does it take to make? I was 50 years old, by the way, at this point,
okay,
half a century on the earth, and I'm writing on a yellow legal pad that I found on the coffee table in front of me. What does it take to make life work? And what have I done to deserve a life of such continuing struggle? Somebody tell me the rules. I swear I'll play. Just give me the rule book. And then, whether you believe it or not, I heard a voice over my right shoulder as clearly as you're hearing mine now, and the voice said, Neil, do you really want answers to all of these questions, or are you just venting? And I recall thinking, oh, great, great. And on top of everything else, I'm losing my mind here. I'm hearing voices. But I allowed myself to just realize, okay, it's just a thought stream, and I answered myself, actually. I said, you know what? Maybe I am just venting, but I sure as heck would like to know the answers to those questions. And with that, I received the answers to all the questions I had ever asked about life and about God, as I had experienced it before. One download, as I've explained this experience before, I should say, it just came to me as a download. All of a sudden, I simply knew. And I realized that I knew, and I began to write, scribbling on my legal pad, everything that I was, I want to say, hearing in my mind. And then, of course, that brought up other questions. So I began writing other questions. And as soon as I wrote the question, I got an answer. Wrote the question, got an answer. Before I knew it, I was involved in an on-paper dialogue with deity, with a source of the highest wisdom within me. I called it a conversation with God. Never, by the way, never dreaming that anyone would ever see it. It started off as a personal process of journaling, private journaling. Never, never imagined that anyone in the public, anyone even outside of my own mind, would ever be exposed to this, but there it was on paper in front of me. And then finally, somewhere in the early part of that ongoing process, by the way, this was going on now every night. I would wake up most nights around 4:25 in the morning, and I would continue to have this ongoing conversation. And at some point, I was told, this will one day become a book. And I thought to myself, ah, now I've got you. Now I've got you. Because everything I'd been, could I use the word receiving until that point, felt like it was conceptual in nature. You know, but here was a statement that was measurable outcome. This will one day become a book. I realized, of course, that there wasn't a chance, one chance in a million, that anyone was going to publish a book from an unknown author, an unknown person who claims to be talking to God. So I realized that was not going to happen. But I took God up on the offer or on the challenge. I actually had the handwritten notes that I was taking typed up and sent to a publisher. And doggone it, if they didn't decide, we're going to put this out as a book called Conversations with God. Now, the rest, as they say, trite as it sounds, is publishing history. You know, the book sold 10 million copies. It wound up being translated into 37 languages. And suddenly, the whole world came to know about this particular experience. And I began getting letters, by the way, letters and emails and phone calls and contact from people all over the world saying, hey, what's so unusual? I've had the same experience. I've had the same exact encounter. I just didn't, you know, turn it into a book. Nor, by the way, did I. I simply sent it to a publisher on a dare from me to me, and it turned into what you now see in front of you. So I continue to have that experience, and out of that experience, actually 9 dialogue books emerged, and that is what I now call the Conversations with God body of work.
When you got published, were you in shock that they decided we're going to do this?
Yeah, couldn't believe it. Of course, you know who it was a phone call. I got a phone call, and he said, you know, this is Bob Friedman at Hampton Roads Publishing Company. We'd like to publish your book. And I said, you're kidding me. You're kidding me. He said, no. Actually, we're going to put it on the fast track. And so they did. They put it on the fast track. It was published within 3 months after they received the manuscript. Without, by the way, without a single word edited. That was what's interesting. You see, you know, nothing was edited or changed in any way by the publisher from the original, what became a manuscript that was sent to them. So it was, and nor have any of my books from that day to this ever been edited in any way.
That's amazing.
They are published exactly as they come off the computer.
Now, are you still conversing, or is this now all coming from you?
Number one, all of us are having conversations with God all the time. We're simply calling it something else. So the answer to your question is, I am, and we all are, still conversing with God. God is talking to all of us, as she said, in the fifth page 5 of 3,000 pages of dialogue. He said very clearly, look, I'm talking to all of you all the time. The question is not, to whom is God talking? The question is, who's listening?
In your latest work, God's Message to the World, the subtitle is interesting because it says, you've got me all wrong. What does that mean?
It means exactly what it says. And it was brought to me in that way to help me understand and to help me to explain to anyone else who would like to hear an explanation what was really going on the earth right now. The problem in the world today, George, is that none of the systems we have put into place to create a better life for all of us on this planet have produced the outcome for which they were designed. I mean, actually, it's worse than that. They've actually produced exactly the opposite. Our political systems, for instance, created to produce safety and security for the world's people, they've produced nothing but disagreement and disarray. Our economic systems, which were created to produce opportunity and, I guess, sufficiency for all, have produced increasing poverty and massive economic inequality, with 85% of the world's people holding, with 5%, I want to say, of the world's people holding 95% of the world's wealth and resources. And the
That's
same is
so true
of all of the other systems we put into place, our economic, our educational systems, our healthcare systems, our social systems, created to produce the joy of community and harmony among a divergent population, more and more generate and encourage discordance, disparity, prejudice, and despair, to say nothing of rampant injustice. Eric Garner, the latest example of it. And most sadly, dysfunctional of all, our spiritual systems, good heavens, created to produce a greater closeness to God and to each other, have produced actually bitter righteousness, shocking intolerance, widespread anger, deep-seated hatred,
yes,
self-justified violence. So what the title means is, you know what? You got me all wrong. All these beliefs that you hold and have held for centuries about me, about God, are simply inaccurate. Massive misunderstandings. And it wouldn't be so bad if they were just, you know, just that, misunderstandings about God. But unfortunately, most of the life that you've created on the earth, the social systems, the economic systems, the political systems I've just described, and just obviously the spiritual systems, are based on your understandings of God. Your legal system, most of the laws, as you know, George, in the world, are based on canon law. Almost
right.
All the laws of humanity were based originally on canon law. Well, you know what? If our earliest understandings of God have been mistaken, we got a problem. Houston, we've got a problem, and we do.
We've got all the laws topsy-turvy, then.
Precisely. And what would happen if we ever decided to just toss these understandings about God that are mistaken out is we would have to virtually rewrite most of our legal systems. The perfect example, the most recent contemporary one, is the law that in some places that says that gays cannot marry. I mean, because why? There's only one justification for that law. God says it's not okay. Who said that?
Who said that? Man said that.
Exactly. And it's one example of 1,000 that we could look at where man thinks that he knows what God wants and what God does not want and has based his laws and his cultural norms and cultural mores on our understanding of what we think God wants and does not want. So if we're wrong about that, if we're even slightly mistaken, we have a major, major problem. And that is, in the nutshell, what is meant by the title You've Got Me All Wrong. It talks about the dysfunction of the world and how it got to be the way it is. It also gives a solution to the whole problem.
We're going to get into that tonight. Neil, I've never seen a time where so many people were upset, topsy-turvy, things are going wrong in their lives. It's rampant. Have you ever seen a time period like this?
Never. No. That's why I wrote a book a couple of years ago called The Storm Before the Calm, addressing exactly that point. And I said in that book, you know, folks, I'm now 71 years old, and guess what? In my 50 adult years, I have never, ever, ever seen anything like this, where, as I said before, none of the systems are working. Nothing is working on this planet. Worse yet, it's producing exactly the opposite what we are asking it to produce. You're perfectly right. So yeah, we're in a mess here. We got huge dysfunctions all across the planet, wherever you look and wherever you go.
When you were writing Conversations with God, was there ever a point that you felt that he, I'll put him in quotes, had left you?
Yeah. In between what became book three and what was book two, I felt that I had been abandoned. My life turned bad again. The little job I had at a I got a little job at a radio station in Medford, Oregon, and darted if I didn't go to work one day, and the station had gone bankrupt. And I walk up to the front door, and there's a bankruptcy notice tacked to the front door, and I thought, you've got to be kidding me. And so, you know, they didn't even pay me the last paycheck for, you know, there I was once again, having pulled myself up by my own bootstraps, as my
yep.
father would say, and then that happens. So and I was in the middle of the process of my communication with my understanding of God, and I became so depressed and so upset and so angry with God, and I just lost touch with the whole experience for about 7 or 8 months there. And finally, at the end, George, at the end of that, it was in the fall of that year, I finally began to have that experience again. I was just writing a letter to someone, and I had the experience again, and I said, well, where have you been? You know, in my little sarcastic way, and God said, no, actually, where have you been?
He put the onus on you.
Well, she just simply let me notice who walked away from whom.
A lot of people, Neil, believe in heaven. They believe in hell. Do they exist?
Not in the classic way that we think. I mean, my understanding. Hell, we know, absolutely doesn't exist. And by the way, even to quote a relatively, or what's assumed to be a relatively authoritative source, even the Pope indicated that. on July 28, 1999, in a weekly address witnessed by about 8,500 people, Pope John Paul II said that a physical, literal hell is a place of eternal and fire and damnation and torment simply does not exist. So, and it was, he shocked half the world's Catholics with that announcement. He said that hell is simply a state of mind, and that even God does not send us there. He said hell is not attributed eternal damnation to God's initiative, but rather that we separate ourselves from God willingly of our own accord, and then we experience hell, which he calls simply the idea of separation from God. So the Pope, and I can quote other sources, Billy Graham as well, says, I don't think I believe in a literal hell and fire of damnation. I'm not sure that that's even true, he said, but I do know that feeling separate from our Maker, separate from our Creator, is what I would call hell. And others have said precisely the same thing. So no, there's no such place as hell where we're thrown into a place of fire and brimstone and eternal damnation and torture and so forth. That simply doesn't exist. But is it possible to imagine ourselves to be separate from God, both now or in the life hereafter? Yes, it is. And that would be a literal hell. Is there a place called heaven? Not in the way we imagine it in the movies or the way it's pictured in all the books, but there is a place called the spiritual realm, which we would call heaven in the sense that it is always here, always now, and all there is love.
What do you say to those skeptics, those agnostics, those scientists who just don't believe in a God?
I say nothing other than, you know, if you're comfortable with that, stay with it, go with it. I have no need to convince you of anything other than what you believe now. You'll find out soon enough. I mean, when you do the thing that you call die, you'll realize that you can't die, that death does not exist, and then you'll experience what all of us will experience upon the death of this particular incarnation, one of an endless stream of incarnations, and you'll understand all of it anyway. So if you're comfortable right now not believing in God and not believing in any of this, well, by golly, I have no need to change your mind about any of that.
How did all of this, Neil, change you?
Well, it caused me to have a new idea of the reason for my life. It gave me a sense of peace, serenity, happiness, joyfulness. But even more than that, those are predictable outcomes, but what might have been not so predictable, a total new thought about why I'm alive. That is, it changed my reason for living and my reason for doing the things that I do. It altered my life priorities tremendously and changed the way I move through my day-to-day experience. So it just gave me a whole new outlook on life and a new raison d'etre, as the French would say, a new reason for being, which had nothing to do with my old agendas. You know, I was raised to think, okay, here's the agenda. It's really very simple. Get the guy, get the girl, get the car, get the job. Get the house, get the kids, get the grandkids, you know, get the spouse, of course. Get the better car, get the better job, get the better spouse, get the better spouse, get the better spouse, get the better car, get the better job. And then one day, you know, get the gray hair, get the sickness, and get the hell out.
Yeah.
That was basically, you know, the agenda for my life until I had my conversation with God when God said to me, you know what, your life has nothing to do with any of that. It has nothing to do with any of that.
You you will find absolutely true what you've just said, because when you get those successes, if you keep striving for more and more and you're just not happy within, it doesn't work. It's a waste of time.
And the shocking thing is that most people, if they're like me, don't even figure that out until they're 50 or 55 years old and they realize, oh my goodness, I've been chasing the carrot in front of the horse, and it has nothing to do with what I'm really here for, which is why I wrote another book, which was called The Only Thing That Matters. And that book starts off with an interesting paragraph. The first paragraph of that book says 98% of the world's people are spending 98% of their time on things that don't matter.
That's true. Why did you wait so long?
I didn't wait so long deliberately. I waited so long because I simply didn't understand. I mean, I just did not understand what was going on in life. I had been living out what I had been told by people whose ideas and whose thoughts I respected, my elders, my tradition, my tribe, if you will. the clan that I emerged from, the whole society in which I was born and in which I lived. And so, you know, I thought those things were true, including all the goals and objectives that I was supposed to be following in life. And
hold on, Neil. We're going to hit the break, and we're going to come back and talk more with Neil Donald Walsh, of course, Conversations with God, latest work, God's Message to the World. Again, many thanks to all the Coast to Coast guests who donated their time and energy to put together the Holiday Magic Coast Style CD to benefit veterans' charities. Thank you to all of you. And you want to see all of those who participated? Well, you can pick up the CD. How do you get it? Simply go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. Click the highlight reel, and you will see a little picture of the CD cover. You click where it says More. It takes you straight to Amazon.com, and you can get it in time for the holidays. I think you'll like it. There will be a few surprises in there for you as well. The Holiday Magic Coast Style CD. Neil Donald Walsh with us, his latest work, God's Message to the World. Neil, what do you say to an individual who says, I've tried, I just can't converse with God, it's not working for me, my life is just not happening the way it should, but nothing's happening? What do you tell that person?
Well, you know, I don't pretend to have all the answers for all the people in the world who are facing the same kinds of problems that I faced in my life. All I can say to that person is what my experience has been. I refuse to put myself in the same position that some of organized religions have done, is to say just do these four things and everything will be fine. I'm not going to say that to that person. All I can say is to that person is, you know, number one, I hear you. Boy, do I hear you. Number two, been there, done that, so know all about that. I'm not talking from the mountaintop here. I've been right where you are. And number three, this is what happened with me. I don't think, however, I would say this much to that person. I don't think it's necessary to have an experience of actually having a conversation with God, a two-way dialogue or whatever that is how I experienced it, in order for life to begin to shift or change for you. I would probably offer one or two tools to that person that they may want to try to use specifically and consistently, tools such as, you know, I hate to get into this, it's almost so trite, it's unbelievable, but we go right back to Norman Vincent Peale, 1949, you know, the power of positive thinking. I would probably say to that person, let's see if we can work with how you're thinking about life itself. Do you believe that you have at some level an ability to co-create with others around you the circumstances, situations, and outcomes in your life? If the person says, no, I don't, I've tried that, it doesn't work, I say, well, then it doesn't. Then it doesn't. Because out of your own mouth, you have already made it clear that it's not going to happen, because you've said that it will not happen. Because you're basing it on your past experience. We get into this hall of mirrors effect, where if something doesn't happen for us immediately, if we don't see an outcome almost at once, we begin to say that it just doesn't work. And then once we get into that frame of mind, in fact, it won't work because it is working. That is, it's working when you're saying that it's not working. So we have to judge not by appearances. We have to look into the face of everything that speaks to the contrary and say, you know what? I'm not buying into it. I'm simply not buying into it. I'm going to change my mind about that, even though it looks as if I've tried everything and nothing in my life is working. I'm going to keep moving forward in any event and begin to change my idea about this and about how life itself works. I've seen people turn their whole lives around by simply looking at the evidence that's to the contrary and then moving in a different direction.
Neil, have you ever had any what we would call angelic intervention in anything you've done?
I think everything has been, you know, divine intervention or angelic intervention from the very beginning. You know, I sent the book to a publisher. I sent it to five publishers, actually, and one of the five publishers actually, and all five rejected it, including the publisher who actually published it, actually at first rejected it. His intake editor is rejected the book and said, I got a form letter, but here is divine intervention number one. I got a form letter back. His intake editor told his secretary, you know, along with the other 50 manuscripts, he unsolicited manuscripts he got that week, send the following letter back. And so the letter said, dear Mr. Wallace, thank you for your submission, but your book doesn't fit our titles list, so we're going to reject it regretfully and so forth. She sent the wrong letter. Divine intervention number one. She had six or eight form letters, I guess, but she sent the one that said, your book doesn't fit our titles list. Well, guess what? Of course, that's the last thing that would be true, because I sent it to a publisher of metaphysical spiritual books.
Right. But
that said to me, you know what? They didn't read it. He flipped it open, read three or four pages, and he just sent it back. So if that hadn't happened, I never would have done what I did next, which was to send a letter directly to the publisher. I went over his head to the publisher, to the owner of the company, and I sent a note to him saying, you know what, would you just read any 10 pages? I wouldn't have minded if you'd said, the book isn't written well, or we don't believe a word of it, or far-fetched. But to say it doesn't fit your titles list, so that tells me you guys didn't even read the damn thing. So I challenge you to read any 10 pages. Then tell me why you don't want to publish the book. And the owner of the company actually read 10 pages. He told me later in the story, he flipped the manuscript open to 10 pages at random. And when he got to the 10th page, he simply picked up the phone and called me. My number was in the front of the manuscript and said, you know what? I love this thing. We're going to publish this book.
Amazing, isn't it?
Totally amazing. And it's one of 100 times that I've seen divine intervention play its effect in my life.
Not just the experience
that I'm having, it's an experience that everyone is having. We're simply calling it something else, coincidence or serendipity or a stroke of luck, but it's all the same thing.
Yeah. Give me your definition of God.
It would be much easier to give you my definition of what God is not rather than give my
definition. All right, let's try God is not, first of all.
Nothing. See, I can give you one word answer to that question. There's nothing, in my understanding, there's nothing that God is not, which means that God is, conversely, everything.
Everything.
There's nothing that God is not. So God is everything, the up and the down, the left and the right, the here and the there, the before and the after, that which is physical, that which is not physical, the sum total of all that is, all that ever was, and all that ever will be. The primal essence, if I want to get more specific, I would say, there's an energy, I would say, in the universe. It's a prime essence.
Yes.
I sometimes like to say that God is the stem cell of the universe. We've now, in the past 25 years or so, come across this unique thing in human bodies called the stem cell, which is an undifferentiated expression of life that then differentiates itself into various forms and becomes the human body and all the organs therein. I keep saying, you know what? God said to me, she's the stem cell of the universe. What he is really is the essential essence, the primal energy, which is not yet differentiated. And then that primal energy differentiates itself and becomes all that we see in physical life, so that all of physical life is an expression of what I call in my vocabulary, God.
Modern religion will tell us that God is an individual up there in the clouds, and it makes it just sound so strange. I've never been able to grasp that.
Yeah, those are some of the misunderstandings we have about God, and I haven't been able to grasp it either since my conversations with God. But not only that God is an individual up there in the clouds, but that God is to be feared, that God demands obedience, that God requires us to believe in God in a certain and particular way, that God is vengeful and that God's love can turn to wrath, or other popular notions about God as well, like God has a plan for us, or God is on our side, or God wants us to return to heaven. And the most profound misunderstanding of all that religion has told us about God, God is separate from us. That is, God is over there, and we're over here, and never the twain shall meet, except perhaps on Judgment Day. And so these are the thoughts, these and many others, that religions have placed into the minds and hearts of man. And this has been going on now for thousands and thousands of years. So these ideas are so deeply ingrained into the common human culture that it's very difficult for us to overthrow them. So the only way to overthrow them, in fact, is to just not believe in God at all. We seem to be faced with Hobson's choice, an interesting idea. Either we accept these notions, which our mind tells us on the surface can't possibly be true, or we reject the notion of God at all. So we throw the baby out with the bathwater. and what Conversations with God has done for the millions and millions of people who have read it in 37 languages. It's given God back to humanity, but a God that we can fall in love with. That was the great letter I got about 20 years ago from a reader who said, thank you for introducing me to a God I can fall in love with.
That's so cool. Yeah, I think if we do not have God in our equation, there's something tremendously missing.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that you're profoundly correct. I think that if we don't have whatever we call it, they want to call it God. If the word God's a pushback for you, fair enough. Use a different word. Call it life, or as I said a minute ago, the primal energy. Whatever a combination of words helps you to grasp the notion that there's something larger than us individually. There's something grander going on here. And that essence, that primal energy, whatever we want to call it, I call it God, call it what you will, arose by any other name. But the existence of that primal energy, that essential essence, is something that if we deny the most powerful aspect of life that any of us could ever hope to become aware of. But if we do not deny it, if we decide to use that primal energy, we discover that it is usable. It can produce consistent and continual results, expected results, intended results. That is, there is something to be said for what Norman Vincent Peale told us in 1948, The Power of Positive Thinking, what Esther and Jerry Hicks wrote about it in their book, Ask and It Is Given, what people have heard about it in the movie and the book, The Secret, in which I happen to have been asked to appear. And in many, many other ways as well. I mean, Emile Coué discussed this, gosh, in the First World War. The French, he was a French doctor and a philosopher as well. And during the First World War, he discovered something that he called intention thinking. He would tell the soldiers in the hospital tents, I want you to say this. This is a famous thing from Emile Coué. I want you to say this 100 times a day. He told a control group of patients, 100 of his wounded soldiers, every day in every way, I get better and better. Every day in every way, I get better and better. And the rest of his patients, he didn't tell them about that. He just let them go ahead and recover if they were going to recover in the way that they did. And he found out after a short period of time that the soldiers who were saying, every day in every way, I get better and better, in fact did at a rate much more rapid and more profoundly inclusive, that is, a larger percentage of the soldiers recovered than those who were not using that, what we now in today's language call an affirmation. So, you know, way, way back, I mean, and of course it precedes even Emile Coué, obviously. People have been talking about how to use this divine force, this energy, this essence, whatever you want to call it. I call it God. We've been talking about this for time immemorial. So if we want to deny that there's something larger than us out there in the universe, I agree with you. I think we're separating ourselves from an incredibly powerful aspect of life itself.
Neil, you have talked about what you call missing data, which somehow ties into the God element as well. What do you mean by that?
I think that we're talking all around it right here. The missing data is what we have not been told about God, the most important item of which is there's no separation a separation of us from the thing that we call God, or that primal energy that we are. That the missing data, that's missing data number one. Who are we in relationship to this essential essence? And the answer is that we are it, that we are that, and no one's telling us that in any kind of an organized way. So that's a huge part of the missing data, that we are that. The second piece of missing data is, what are we doing here? So I think we have to ask ourselves a fundamental question in life, George. Question is, who are we really? Are we essentially biological entities, just chemical creatures? Are we like no different from dolphins and whales and birds, except as to the complexity of our evolutionary process? We are more evolved, perhaps, but rather other than that, that's what we are. We are born, we live, we breathe, we die, and that's the end of it. Or is it in fact possible that we are something more than that? That we are actually spiritual entities having a body? Is it possible that I am not my body, but that I am just that which has a body and that which has a mind? If we decide, if we come down on that side of the equation and say, you know, I'm more than just a sophisticated mammal, I'm actually a spiritual entity carrying a body and a mind around, then we needs must ask a logical question. Why? Why? What is the point of this? Why? Yes. Why would I then, if I really am a spirit, an essential essence, part of the essence that Neil is talking about, then what am I doing here? Why in the world would I subject myself to this experience called physical life? That's the missing data as well. And that's why I wrote that book, The Only Thing That Matters, because no one's telling us this. No one's given us the answer. 98% of us are spending 98% of our time on things that don't matter, and no one is telling us what does. Not in school, not in university, not even religions. No. Even philosophers have missed the whole point. So the missing data is that there's no separation between us and this divine essence. And the second part of the missing data is, why are we here? What are we doing? What is the purpose and of life itself? Once we understand those things, a whole life changes. And if we ever got to a place where everyone on the earth, or even the largest number of us on the earth, I'll settle for one over half, 51.5% of us, if we ever get to that point where over half of us understand this, boy, I mean, life on the planet is going to change dramatically and instantaneously.
I was in New York, Neil, a couple of years ago, and I'm walking down their busy streets in Manhattan, looking at all these people with their briefcases, dressed up, just, you know, coming and going, minding their own businesses, but, gosh, hundreds of thousands of people. And I asked myself that question you just posed, and that is, what are we doing here? What is this? I mean, what are all these objects that look like human beings walking around with little briefcases with their suits and ties on? What's the purpose? What are they doing here? That is a fundamental question, I think, that we have to answer as individuals, don't we?
Boy, yes, and most people don't answer it or even look at it, even question it, till they're around 60, 70, or 80 years old, and some regretfully on their deathbed. And my father, God bless him, he was a wonderful guy, but he didn't get it, you know, on the day he died. I mean, he looked at me a few months before he died. I'll never forget this. I was visiting him for Thanksgiving one year, the year he died, and he looked at me and he said, "I don't understand any of it." I said, "What did you just say?"
But what a great question.
Yeah. "I don't understand any of it." He had no idea who he was. Why he is here. I've been told by God that there are four fundamental questions in life we must ask. Who am I? Where am I? That is, what is this place that I'm in? Mm-hmm. What is this physical place I'm in? Why am I where I am? And what do I intend to do about that?
Yes.
Most people have never even asked themselves those questions, much less found the answer that feels true for them.
You will find that if you answer that question, those questions, or even attempt to, it changes your entire life
immediately.
Yeah.
And your friends, by the way, will say, "Whoa, what happened to you? You know, what are you on? Well, what's going on?" Because you will be other than the norm. And yet, I think, you know, hopefully, that's where the human race is now starting to move. We're seeing more and more people, by the thousands, by the millions, frankly, out of the billions of us. That's still a small percentage, but it's growing daily. People who are beginning to find those questions, beginning to answer those questions in a way that feels true to them, and beginning, in fact, to shift their lives. The only question now is whether we can do it fast enough to win this human race.
Well, with Neil Donald Walsh, we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take your phone calls with him. His latest work is called God's Message to the World. And Neil's website, of course, is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. And also invite all of you to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, where we get current information to you on Twitter, especially as quickly as we can, about just breaking stories and events that are happening here at Coast to Coast AM. We're going to come back, share your stories with us. Perhaps you've had your own conversation with God.